Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we talked about it briefly yesterday, since the oral arguments were still going on over the individual mandate. We got the impression that things were going well, given the comments of the justices, particularly Justice Kennedy. What we didn't know at the time were a couple of things. Just how horribly, apparently, the Solicitor General did in trying to answer questions from skeptical justices, just how well Paul Clement apparently did in defending the case against the individual mandate. And we also didn't know just how glum and down in the dumps liberals were listening to this as well. So there seems to be pretty strong consensus that, at least in terms of oral arguments, this really went well for people who don't like the mandate and generally don't like Obamacare. Here's Jeffrey Toobin on CNN, just almost aghast at how badly the government did here.
This was a train wreck for the Obama administration. This law looks like it's going to be struck down. I'm telling you, all of the predictions, including mine, that the justices would not have a problem with this law were wrong. Justice Kennedy, the swing vote, was enormously skeptical.
And even beyond that, the Solicitor General would have been in far worse position had the four liberal justices not repeatedly bailed him out during his hour.
Because we all know that's what the justices are there for, right, to assist one side. A couple of points here. The first is, you know, Jeffrey Toobin's assessment was so shocking, and he obviously did not mince words at all in his assessment there, that Harry Reid felt the need to denounce him and come out and say that I've spent more time in a courtroom than Jeffrey Toobin does. Now, Jeffrey Toobin, let's have no illusions here. This is a guy who was on Journalist. This is a guy who's spoken very favorably about Obamacare. I don't think you can say this guy's a conservative by any stretch of the imagination. Let us salute this man for an assessment that's got to be his honest opinion, an admission against interest, and coming out, and as I noted in the Morning Jolt today, in that little snippet you played, Jeffrey Toobin admits he was wrong. Greg, this is Washington. Nobody ever admits that they're wrong around here. And it was kind of fascinating. You could see the aftershocks of that assessment. Then I started thinking, well, okay, maybe Toobin saw things in a particularly bad light. Although let's keep in mind that he's written a book about the Supreme Court. This is his bread and butter. So you'd think he'd at least have a pretty good idea of how the justices think and what kind of arguments are likely to move them. He then, left really no room, and really there wasn't anybody who very much disagreed with him. I mean, you really can't find anybody who said the Solicitor General did a good job yesterday. The overwhelming consensus of everyone who was in that room said he just started off bad and it went downhill from there. Some people are speculating that it was nerves. Some people are saying he had a health issue with allergies or a cold or something. But for whatever reason, he is now the Scott Norwood of Supreme Court cases. And I feel bad because he can't be that bad a lawyer as he was yesterday. He just, choked or whatever, however you want to put it. But one other note worth making here, which is that in the end, he's basically being asked to say that the question effectively from Kennedy and from a lot of the justices was, look, if the federal government has the authority to make someone purchase health insurance, what is left that is off limits for it under this interpretation of the Commerce Clause? And in the end, the arguments of the government is nothing. In the end, the Commerce Clause permits Congress to pass laws on just about anything it wants to do. And that's a very, very tough argument to put to anybody, particularly Anthony Kennedy. And I think the day of oral arguments, for whatever it is worth in the final decision, could not have gone much better than it did yesterday for the Obamacare critics.
Absolutely right. And let's not forget that there's a doubleheader today at the Supreme Court, the first one on severability. So if the mandate goes down, the whole thing could potentially go down. This would seem to be a tougher fight, but we'll see. And then the last bit of this is whether or not the federal government can force a whole lot more costs on the states for this dramatic expansion of Medicaid, which is really how they're planning to insure millions of more people, Medicaid, which a lot of doctors don't even take anymore because they don't get reimbursed. So if it does go through, congratulations, people who don't currently have insurance, because not much is really going to change for you. On to a martini number two now. And Mitt Romney seems to be doing what he can and moving closer and closer, state by state, to the magic number of 1,144 delegates. So more and more polls are being done and matching him up against President Obama. And one from the Washington Post and ABC News suggests that he's got a lot of work to do to make Americans like him. In a new poll, 50% of all adults, 52% of registered voters express unfavorable opinions of Romney. 53% seem to like President Obama. The hard negatives are pretty equal, with Obama actually a little bit higher in the high negatives. But in an age of television and popularity contests, Romney's definitely got a lot of work ahead of him, Jim.
Yeah, it is. It is not encouraging. It's worth noting. Look, we don't know the sample on this poll, and it's only measuring likability. It's not who would you vote for. It is not who do you think is a better president. By and large, the coverage of Obama is you know still laudatory in his personal life and his wonderful family and such. So, and a lot of the, you know, look, a Republican primary is inherently going to have a lot of critical coverage of Mitt Romney. You know, that the idea that, oh, he's rich and he's out of touch and he's kind of stiff and all this other stuff. Not panicking yet, but this is something that his campaign and the Republican Party needs to keep an eye on. I think there's a lot more to be told about Mitt Romney. I think he had a very impressive appearance on Jay Leno last night, seeming calm and relaxed and easygoing and kind of a more casual side of Mitt Romney than we're used to seeing on the trail. And so I think we need to see a bit more of that. I think we need to see a bit more of Ann Romney. I think we need to see a bit more of Mitt Romney, the family man, kind of the, dare I say, the after hours Mitt Romney. the idea of just, you know, who he is as a person beyond his policy proposals. And, you know, because I think once Americans get to know him, they'll feel a little better about him. As it is now, he's just kind of this, some people have, you know, called him Guy Smiley or the car salesman, or, you know, most people know him from these contexts of these debates and these political events. And that doesn't necessarily leave a lot of what who he is personally for Americans to feel warm and fuzzy towards.
No, certainly true. And he perhaps will get a little bit of boost from Newt downsizing his campaign. But Newt says he's in it until somebody's actually got the 1144 on the delegate count. So maybe not. But Jim, on to Martini number three now. And one of your favorite people of all time, Arlen Specter, joins us for the third Martini. You'll remember that back in 2004, even though Rick Santorum didn't endorse Pat Toomey against then-Republican Senator Specter, the Club for Growth sure did. And the Club for Growth is back, of course, this year, picking its favorites in Republican primaries, including State Treasurer Richard Murdoch in Indiana over longtime Republican incumbent Dick Lugar. That did not sit well with Senator Specter. Here's what he had to say.
Well, the Club for Growth is another cannibal organization. They're out to defeat Senator Dick Lugar. Dick Lugar is one of the very best, if not the best, United States senator today.
Jim, if you're Dick Lugar and you're working your tail off to try and win a Republican nomination against a more conservative opponent, do you really think that the endorsement of Arlen Specter is going to do much good for you here in the last few weeks?
You know, all he's got to do is pick up Charlie Crist and Didi Scosafaza, and he'll have hit for the cycle in unwanted endorsements in a Republican primary. It's kind of interesting because Indiana is, after last cycle, when you saw, you know, Charlie Crist versus Marco Rubio and Pat Toomey versus what looked like it was going to be a primary challenge against Arlen Specter, you really thought we would see more of these classic Tea Party versus establishment Senate primaries. And there really hasn't been quite as much energy and attention on those types of them. Richard Murdoch versus Dick Lugar is as close as that classic showdown you're going to see. Lugar undoubtedly the favorite, but Murdoch appears to be gaining pretty fast. And Lugar has had quite a few bumps in the road. He's running for, I believe, a fifth or sixth term. And some Indiana Republicans might be feeling it's time for some new blood there. So certainly a race to keep an eye on. And I think that, you know, the fact that Richard Murdoch was touting Specter's endorsement and Lugar wasn't probably tells you a lot about the reputation of Arlen Specter in the party these days.
Yeah. Email from Lugar to Specter. Thanks. Now don't say another word at least through May 8th in this race. So, way to go, Senator Specter. Way to go. All right. Jim, have a great day. Enjoy the final day of the oral arguments, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.